Did you all survive 4th of July? I don't know about you, but my neighborhood sounded like a war zone. But I was glad we were celebrating that very important holiday. However, this morning I want to talk about the beach barbecue. Week before last, I had a great time camping on the Columbia River at a lovely campground at Skamaka Way. That's halfway between Longview and Long Beach for those of you who lived here all your lives and haven't noticed it. As I was reading the gospel out there by the Columbia, it put me in mind of another camping trip I took in eastern Washington. Silver Springs State Park sits on a sagebrush-covered hill overlooking Lake Roosevelt Lake near Coulee Dam. It was a quiet camp since most of the denizens were retired. The men fished and the women stayed in camp and read. I got up early and inflated my rubber raft with a foot pump. I overheard the guys at the dock grouse that only the perch were biting. I smiled. Few perch would be fine on my campfire. But being there was just enough. I loved the hot, silent sun of the high desert, the smell of sagebrush in bloom, and the soft brown hills. I clambered into my rubber ducky, set my oars, and rowed down the shoreline to a sheltered inlet. As I paddled happily, I let my fishing line trail along behind me, as close as I could get to trolling without a motor. If any of you want to know what trolling is, ask a fisher person. Suddenly, my line went taut, and my rod bent nearly double. It took me a while to work my catch over to the boat, and I couldn't believe what I saw when I landed it. I was holding a 16-inch kokanee, a landlocked salmon. They used to be plentiful years ago, but not now. For me, it was the catch of a lifetime, almost as good as the muskellunge I landed when I was 12. I steamed my kokanee with Indian fry bread over the campfire that night. It was an unexpected feast of fish and bread, maybe the best fish I'd ever tasted. You know what makes my mouth water just thinking about it? Well, for the disciples, when the soldiers executed Jesus, the disciples fell apart. Their grief weighed them down like a backpack full of stones. Jesus had called them to fish for people instead of fish, and they just couldn't do it without him. Besides, they were plain lonely. Peter got some of the others, and they went back to their boats to go fishing for fish. They spent the darkest hours of the night on Lake Galilee, throwing out the nets and pulling them in, again and again. It was backbreaking work. By sunrise, they had caught not one single fish. Then this guy standing on the shore hollered to them, "Put your nets over on the other side of the boat. Like, that would make a difference?" Now, I fish, and I know that either the fish are there or they're not, and it's true on both sides of the boat. Well, nothing else had worked, so the disciples decided to try it the stranger's way. And then they pulled in so many fish, they thought the nets must surely break. It was the catch of a lifetime. Go figure. Jesus, the carpenter turned rabbi, knew more about fishing than the professionals. Right away, John guessed who it was and yelled, "Hey guys, that's got to be Jesus." He was right. It was the risen Christ, their rabbi, their teacher. You know, we don't hear much about Jesus' cooking skills in the Bible. But after the disciples came ashore and beached the boat, they came to the campfire, still wet and dripping lake water. Jesus stood waiting, ready to serve them breakfast, perfectly roasted fish and hot bread baked in the campfire. It was an unexpected feast of fish and bread. It makes my mouth water just thinking about it. The disciples learned some deep and powerful lessons at that campfire feast, not by anything Jesus said to them, but simply by sharing that beach barbecue. And today, if we listen, Christ teaches us the same lessons in the story of a campfire breakfast. First lesson, after Jesus' execution, his followers must have wondered, did we make a mistake following this itinerant rabbi? After all, who were they to be called special? just ignorant fisher folk, nobodies, one and all. Even if Jesus had risen from the dead, as some claimed, you couldn't very well wander the trails of Galilee with a guy that walks through doors, travels instantaneously, and shows up erratically. They had forgotten that Jesus said and told them, "I will never leave you nor abandon you." That morning at breakfast, Jesus' followers learned that in spite of everything, they could still follow him. He would be with them all the time. He would always meet them at the table. It wasn't over. It would never be over. Of course, we know that we can be followers of Christ. Eh? I want to see nods. All right. When we feel on top of the world, we remember God's love pretty easily. But when things go badly for us, we can forget. It's true in life as well as in matters of faith. Although we are born with strong little egos, life puts dents in our self-esteem as long as we live. Brian had been feeling down for so long that he finally decided to go to a psychiatrist. He went there, lay on the couch, and spilled his guts. Then he waited for the psychiatrist to speak the wise words that would make him feel better. The psychiatrist sat with a puzzled look on his face for a few minutes, and then he brightened and said, "Ah, Brian, I think I understand your problem. You have low self-esteem. It's very common among losers." Along with low self-esteem, almost all of us lack confidence in ourselves some of the time. We try to make a difference in the world, and the results don't turn out the way we plan. We accomplish something in our work life and then watch while others chip away at our vision. It happens to everyone. You know, even the great and powerful wrestle with self-doubt. On the day he turned 70, John Quincy Adams, the sixth president of the United States, wrote this in his diary. "My whole life has been a succession of disappointments. I can scarcely recollect a single instance of success in anything I ever undertook." Robert Louis Stevenson wrote stories and poetry that delight us and enrich our lives. Yet he asked that this epitaph be carved on his gravestone. "Here lies one who meant well, who tried a little, and failed much." We all have times when we get lost in disappointment or when grief blasts us into paralysis. Now, I want to know, have any of you ever tried to say something and your tongue gets tangled? Sure. Have you ever had days when you feel like you just can't do anything right? Well, there was a mother-daughter banquet a few years ago, and the MC asked for the daughters to come up and share what their mother had taught them, what wisdom. A 14-year-old girl named Sarah quickly volunteered and came to the front. Her mother wondered what, of all the wisdom she had taught her daughter, Sarah would say. Sarah cleared her throat and said, "I'm really proud of what my mother has taught me. My mom taught me to love my body now, because I'm going to hate it when I'm 40. Whether we feel on top of the world, or especially on those days when we've blown it big time, that's when we need to discover Christ by the campfire, loving us and inviting us to breakfast. That's the first lesson. No matter how we feel or what we think of ourselves, when we come to this table, this one, to remember Jesus and his teachings, we encounter the sacred, and it always makes a difference. Always. Second lesson. On the night before Jesus' execution, Peter blew it big time. He denied his rabbi three times, said, "I don't even know the man." When he saw Jesus by the campfire that morning, Peter must have had some mixed feelings. No doubt he was excited to see Jesus, but he also had a lot of guilt to live with. It isn't easy to face someone who you've hurt. But Peter didn't even give But Jesus didn't even give Peter a chance to apologize. He only asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And Peter replied, "Yes, Rabbi, you know I love you." When we mess up, it's easy, like Peter, to doubt God's forgiveness. It's hard to forgive when we've been hurt. It's even harder to forgive ourselves when we've made a mistake. We tend to berate ourselves for our stupidity or our carelessness. We may be tempted to wallow in self-pity. Well, perhaps you don't. But I'll tell you, self-pity is not helpful. Aldous Huxley once wrote, "Rolling in the muck is not the best way to get clean." Remember this, folks. Recriminations never come from God. Never. They're coming from inside yourself and from your own guilt. Jesus didn't browbeat Peter for his betrayal, although he certainly could have. In effect, Jesus told him, "Peter, what you did doesn't matter anymore. Let the past go. I know you love me." There's a Spanish story of a father and a son who had a fight, a real Donnybrook. The son ran away, and the father set off to find him. He searched for months, and then, in a last desperate effort, he put an ad in a Madrid newspaper. The ad read like this: "Dear Paco, meet me in front of this newspaper office at noon on Saturday. All is forgiven. I love you, Dad." Well, he went there Saturday, not knowing what would happen. But on Saturday, 800 Pacos showed up, hoping for Dad to offer forgiveness, acceptance, and love. Now, I don't know about you, but I think we all have days when we feel like our name ought to be Paco. Christ meets us at this table to remind us of God's love and to remind us that no matter how badly we screw things up, we are still welcomed and loved. All of us, every one of us. Instead of accusation, Jesus drew Peter into the future instead. "I've fed you. Now it's time for you to do what I've done. There's work to do. Do you love me? Feed my sheep." Our relationship with Christ is not based on changing circumstances. Our relationship with God is what draws us into discipleship. God's call to be a faithful people does not have an expiration date. Jesus distills all our definitions of discipleship into pure simplicity. "Do you love me? Feed my sheep." Here at First Congregational, you have sought to live out Christ's call to love and justice. You've had a lot of success, and you've made some mistakes. Sometimes you've overlooked the obvious. Yet with each unexpected twist and turn, with every obstacle, you either built a bridge, tunneled over it, or you went around it. You found a creative solution to every challenge. Be always aware of Christ's call to love your neighbor, just like Jerry said this morning. And always finding ways to share God's love. I feel a little as if I'm preaching to the choir this morning, and I don't mean the one that sits over there. But I want to remind us all, me too, that when Christ meets us at this table, he feeds us, yes, but he also keeps us on track. That's the second lesson. God's forgiveness is so immense and profound, it's hard to comprehend. But no matter what we've done, the call to love and action is still in effect. If we ever forget that, we'll be reminded here. No recriminations, but we hear the echo of Jesus' voice. "Do you love me? Feed my sheep." Third lesson. There are only three, so don't get panicky. It wasn't just the followers of Jesus who shared daily meals with him. He ate with anybody and everybody. And I do mean everybody. Besides the good times, Jesus was always teaching, telling stories, and challenging the establishment. Those meals with Jesus were special simply because he was there. That sunrise barbecue must have reminded the disciples of all those good times. There was an earlier time when Jesus surprised the disciples with a meal of fish and bread. Maybe you can remember it. Maybe you already know what I'm going to say. On that day, Jesus had been teaching all day, and as the sun dropped low, the disciples noticed that the people were hungry. But they were far from the village square, and they couldn't afford to buy food for everyone. A little boy gave Jesus his lunch of bread and fish. Jesus blessed it and fed all 5,000 people. On that day, Jesus taught his disciples that when he sets a meal, he invites everyone. No one goes hungry, and there's enough for everyone. I'll bet the disciples remember that day as they ate the fish and bread by Jesus' campfire. At that beach barbecue, they learned that their teacher would still be present at the table whether they could see him or not. I know that the disciples learned that lesson because they passed it on. In the earliest written liturgies of the early church, we find a very interesting bit of trivia. When those folks came to the table to remember Jesus, they included fish on the altar along with bread and cup. In memory of those two meals, on the hillside and on the beach. We join at this table every first Sunday to share the bread and cup, yet ritual can become something we just do when we drive long distances. I don't know about you, but my mind shifts into autopilot. When we brush our teeth, our minds drift to other things. And when we are in distress, it's hard to focus on anything. When we come to this table, we remember Jesus. We remember that Jesus said, "Do this to remember me." But we don't just remember Jesus any more than the disciples just reminisced at their breakfast of bread and fish. When we come to this table, we encounter a thin place between the universe of sense and feeling and the universe that we cannot see. When we come to this table, this thin place, we meet the sacred, the risen Christ, every time without fail. Whether you feel anything or not, it happens. That's the third lesson. After our long nights of fishing, working, living, we come to this table prepared for us just when we need strength and renewal the most. Christ comes to accept us, to feed us, and to love us, and then sends us out to share God's love with others. This morning is our beach barbecue. We stand on the beach with the disciples, surrounded by the mouth-watering smells of fresh-caught fish cooked in a campfire and journey bread baked in the coals. The risen Christ stands by the campfire, waiting. Come to Christ's table and hear his invitation. Feed my sheep, feed one another. Come to Christ's table and remember how much God loves you. Come to Christ's table and listen as he calls. Breakfast is ready, come and get it. Makes my mouth water just thinking about it. Amen.